question of the king of Mesopotamia under Othniel, the people from Moab, Amalekites, and Midianites, I guess it was, under Ehud. Shamgar killed a few folks, 600. What people were they? He killed 600 of them with an ox goad. Philistines. Okay. Then, of course, the Canaanites were defeated when Jael put the nail. I didn't mean that to come out that way, but when Jael put the nail through the head of Sisera. Okay. But the trouble for the children of Israel is not over because of their actions. Today we're going to see a rather difficult time for these folks. We've had periods of rest, periods of oppression, and as the people turned to God, then He would always send them a deliverer. Today we're going to be talking a little bit about those people defined as the Midianites, and also in verse 3 of chapter 6, we'll be doing Judges chapter 6 through 8 today. It talks about not only the Midianites, but the Amalekites again, and the children of the east came up against the children of Israel. And we know a little bit about Midianites. If you go all the way back to Genesis chapter 25, flip back over it just for a minute, kind of see the origin maybe of these people. Genesis chapter 25, now this Sarah has died. So Abraham takes another wife by the name of Keturah. In verse 2, they have six sons. One of them has a name, Midian. So that's the origination of the tribe of the Midianites. Also, verse 5 and 6 talked about Abraham giving all that he had unto his son Isaac. But unto the sons of the concubines, he gave them gifts, sent them away from Isaac his son, which he, while he yet lived, eastward unto the east country. So these are some of the people that are descendants of Abraham through his wife Keturah. Now we've talked about this, I think, a couple of Sundays ago. When Moses went into the land of Midian, of course, he married Jethro's daughter. Later on, he asked Hobab, his brother-in-law, to lead them. So from that we know that the Midianites were down in the Sinai Peninsula, south of the land of Canaan. And now we see them being the oppressor. But that's not the only time we've had trouble with the Midianites. Back in Numbers chapter 11, verse 24, or chapter 10, you remember the story of Balaam wanting to gain the riches offered to him by Balak if he would curse the children of Israel? Now, you know what happened. God did not allow him to curse them. But he said, now, what you need to do, you need to get these Midianite women to intermarry, have sexual relations with the children of Israel. And as a result, 24,000 Israelites died. So there was an alliance, at least at one point, between the Midianites and the Moabites. So that gives us a little background as to some of the people we're talking about. But, as I said, this is a very difficult time. If you read down through the first few verses of chapter 10, you're going to find out that the Israelites, they were being so oppressed that they were hiding just about anywhere they could find. Caves in the mountains, building strongholds, getting in holes, and so forth. And we'll even see Gideon down in a wine press hiding. So they're doing about everything they can to keep from being killed or whatever the situation might be. And these enemies, they were not just smart. It seemed like they were a little bit lazy too. They would let the Israelites plant the crop, cultivate the crop, and then when it was time to harvest it, they just come in and basically wipe out the country. Not just stealing the food itself, they just take the oxen, camel, you know, whatever was there. And they would even bring some of theirs along for the ride. So why not? You know, we might as well let them feed while we're taking everything too. So it's a very difficult time. It said those people were like grasshoppers, like locusts, and so forth. Basically just ripping the land, shredding it from the Israelites. So, what's the solution? You know what the solution is. They are repenting, turning to God, crying to the Lord for help. And he's going to send a prophet. Not only is the prophet going to tell them what God has done for them down through the ages, but he's going to tell them why they're in the situation they're in. If you look at verse 13, I believe it is, no, verse 10, he says, "But ye have not obeyed my voice." So that's the bottom line. These people again are under oppression because they have not obeyed the voice of the Lord. Okay, so he sends an angel. I guess that's why I had the next slide up there. He sends an angel, and it's in the, probably in the land of Manasseh. Don't know for sure. I draw that conclusion at least from the fact that Gideon was from Manasseh. If you look at verse 15, I believe it is, he talks about being his family poor in Manasseh and so forth. So we assume that the location where this angel comes and sits under the oak tree to deliver God's message and set up a new deliverer occurred probably in this region. Okay, so he comes to Gideon, and Gideon is hiding in the wine press, threshing out wheat because he's afraid of the Midianites. And here's the message. He said, "You, mighty man of valor." Gideon is really impressed, wasn't he? He said, "What are you talking about?" If God is with us, because he says, "You mighty man of valor, the Lord is with you." He said, "What do you mean the Lord is with us? Look at what's happening to us today." He said, "Where are all these miracles we've been told about? How he brought us out of Egypt. And now look at what happened. He has forsaken us and turned us over into the hands of the Midianites." So, the message again comes in a little bit stronger this time. He says, "Go in this might of yours, and thou shalt save Israel from the Midianites. Have not I sent you?" You think Gideon heard that last part? Indication is not. He was still listening to the first part, seems like. You're the one who's going to deliver them. But he missed the very important point. As we go through this story, we're going to see this man who seems as if his strength, That's what he's thinking in his mind, is going to deliver the people. But as God leads him through this process, we see his faith building step by step by step, until we finally see a man who goes to war against a group of people that are just described again as grasshoppers, have camels unnumbered like the sand of the sea and so forth. And here he is, all he's got is a trumpet, a pitcher with a lamp in it, and things like that, including a vast army of 300 men. So when I read through this again, I thought about the same thing happened with Moses. When God appeared to him and says, go and lead the children of Israel out of the bondage of Egypt. So we see similar type things. Excuses, sign after sign after sign as this process takes place. But we're going to get there. And he asks the question, how can I save Israel? He said again, my family is poor, we're from the tribe of Manasseh, and besides that, I'm the least in my father's house. But here's some assurance. I will be with you, and surely thou shalt smite the Midianites. And he said, if I have found favor in your sight, then show me a sign. Show me a sign that you're even talking to me. And so the angel waits for Gideon to go and kill a kid goat, make some unleavened bread, prepare the flesh in a basin, put broth in it, and bring it out before him. And of course, we're going to see this angel is not particularly interested in him falling down and worshiping him. But he waits until that happens. And then he has Gideon to take the flesh, the unleavened bread, put it on a rock, pour out the broth. And then what's going to happen? What happens? Okay. Right, right. He touches it with the tip of his staff, and fire comes out of the rock, consumes the offering that has been brought to him. And then we see the angel vanishing. And we see that Gideon recognizes at that point that he's been in the presence of the Lord, and of course, he's afraid he's going to die. But he has the assurance that he will not die. But here God begins to test his faith a little bit more. He says, I want you to build an altar. But this particular altar was called Jehovah Shalom, which means the Lord is peace. So he says, I want you to go out, and I want you to tear down the altar of Baal, and maybe the Asherah pole, or some versions say the grove surrounding the altar and so forth. And he said, I want you to replace that altar with an altar to Jehovah. And not only that, I want you to go and get one of your father's bulls, put it on the altar, and take the wood that you have in your possession from tearing down the altar of Baal and also cutting down the grove, and use that to kindle the fire. Would that be a strong test? How many of us have maybe been inclined maybe sometime to do something maybe that our father might not be too happy about. This was not just some altar to Baal. This was his father's altar. So here we see him having to balance maybe his respect and so forth for his father against what he has been asked to do by the angel of the Lord. Does that remind you of anything during the days of the apostles? Peter said, what? We must obey God rather than man. So here he is. He's probably thinking, my daddy ain't gonna be real happy with me at all. But he's told to do something by the angel of the Lord. And so we see him going ahead and doing it. Of course, there has to be some apprehension because he does take 10 of his men and he goes out and carries out that order at night. Now, he has reason to be concerned, I imagine, because you see what happens. The very next morning, said the men of the city rose early, and they saw what had happened. Not only could they see the altar torn down, the groves cut down, and so forth, but here's a sacrifice, and it's still burning. How they suspected, or why they suspected Gideon, obviously we're not told. But somehow or another, they are pretty sure who is the culprit in this matter. So they want to put Gideon to death. And again, we don't know exactly why Joash does what he does, but somehow his cooler head prevails and he says, okay, instead of us killing him, tell you what we'll do. We're just going to let Baal kill him. If Baal's a god and he don't like what's happened, just let him take care of the situation. Of course, we know the answer to that. Baal is not a god, and Baal's not going to do anything about it. He doesn't have the power to do that. So, again, that's a test of faith, and his faith and trust is building. So, that time it said Gideon's name is called Jerubbaal, which means let Baal plead against him because he had thrown down his altar. So as we get to the 30, verse 33 or 4, it looks like the battle is about to begin. The Amalekites, the Midianites, and the children of the East, they're gathered at Jezreel in the Jezreel Valley, and I've got a chart here in a minute. But Freddie talked about that numerous times Wednesday night. It's up out on the border of Manasseh and the four northern tribes. So they're gathered, and Gideon sends word out to gather an army from Manasseh and those tribes up there, Asher, Zebulun, Naphtali. And why Issachar's not ever named, I don't know. They may have been all hiding. They couldn't find them, maybe. I don't know. But at least the tribes in the northern, three of the northern tribes are called to help in this particular fight. But things are not going to happen just quite yet. Gideon is still saying, if he will save Israel by my hand, then would you give me a sign? What's the sign he wants? He says, we're going to put a little fleece of wool out here on the ground. In the morning, now I want the fleece to have dew on it and all the ground around it, I want it to be dry. Well, that's exactly what happened. In fact, How much dew was on that piece of fleece? Yeah, you could wring water out of it instead of a bowl of water. I mean, it wasn't just damp. You're talking about a soaking. It was a soaking. He says, now, don't get upset at me, but let me just ask you for one more sign. He knows he's kind of walking on thin ground, seems to me like. He said, now tomorrow, I'd like to put that fleece back out there again. I want the ground to be wet, and I want the fleece to be dry. And of course, that's exactly what happened. So, not only do we see, again, maybe his faith building, but we see the patience of God dealing with this man. He's not ready yet, but God is leading him on and giving him reasons to trust. Patience, long suffering on the part of God. Did I hear somebody say something? All right. So it looks like old Gideon, he's about ready to go. Because if we get into chapter 7 and verse 1, he tells the people, he said, they rose up early. Again, it kind of sounds like Abraham when God told him to do something. Abraham, it said he rose early. Anytime you read about a command that God gave to Abraham, it says he arose early in the morning. I guess that ought to be a lesson for us. When he tells us to do something, we ought to say, all right, I'm with it. Get on with it and not delay. But, so he's ready to go. Got the people up there ready to camp out, go to battle, and we will see again this picture here. This is the Jezreel Valley that I mentioned, kind of between the land of Ephraim and the four northern tribes. And so the enemy is on the north side of the valley, and Gideon and his men are on the south side. Now I'm going to go ahead and point out while I'm here. See that little bunch of folks right there? They're called Ephraimites. Now look where the battle is taking place. We'll talk about that just in a minute. Okay, so here we are. Looks like we're about ready to go. But is God ready to go yet? No. He's not ready either. He says, Gideon, you got entirely too many folks. You got 32,000, and you're going to go out here and fight against the people. It's just numbered like, we don't know what the number was. Grasshoppers unnumbered, as many as the sand of the sea. But God said, you got too many folks. So, we see him saying, anybody that's afraid, you can go home. I've probably been out leading the pack. He said, if you're afraid to go to the house, I'd have been running. 22,000 of them dead. They went home, leaving 10,000. But God said, that's still too many folks. Way too many folks. He said, I will try them. So he makes it very clear who is now in charge. God is in charge. He said, it shall be that when I say unto thee, this shall go with thee, that's who's going to go. And when I say, these shall not go with thee, then these are not going to go. So God is definitely in control, and he's letting Gideon know that I am in control. I think Gideon's about got the picture right now. He's about to realize that God is, in fact, in control. tells Gideon, says, bring these people down to the water and ask them to drink. And now, listen again. He's going to give the criteria. Not only are these people going to drink, but he says, I want you to separate them based on how they drink. So again, we see God being in complete control of this situation. He said, whosoever laughs like a dog with his tongue, put them over there with Scott. Those that get down and on their knees and separate them over here with Coach Merle. So, 300 men laughed, bringing their hand to his mouth, indicating again that these people were on guard. They were ready to fight. And so, he tells, send the rest of these people home. And he says, I will deliver Israel by these 300 men. So now, Gideon's got the full picture. He realizes that God is in control, but yet we see again the patience and the long-suffering of God. He said, Gideon, you're going to deliver, these people are going to be delivered into your hand this night. But if you're still afraid, you just go down, you take your servant Pura. You go down and into the Midianite camp and listen to what these people say. And so Gideon goes down and he hears one of the Midianites describing a dream that he had about a barley loaf rolling down the hill into the camp, knocking over a tent. And the other guy says, I know what that indicates. That is the sword of Gideon, for into his hand hath God delivered Midian and all the host. So when Gideon heard this, God said, when you hear that, you'll be strengthened. So he takes the 300 men, divides them into three different groups, gives each man a trumpet, a pitcher, and a torch. And he said, now you watch me. Whatever I do, you do the same. So at the appropriate time, about 10 o'clock at night, the middle watch, it said, they blew the trumpets, broke the pitchers, held the torch or lamp in their hand, and shouted, the sword of the Lord and of Gideon. And they stood in their place, surrounded the camp. And so, have you ever been, does anything ever happen to wake you up real quick in the night, maybe right after you've gone to sleep? You're kind of disoriented, so to speak. I know I am. Don't wake me up after I've just gone to sleep, ask my wife. You don't want to do that. But these people apparently were so disoriented maybe, but God was doing this. So they start killing each other. But some of them start to flee. And of course these armies, this army that has been put together out of the tribes of Manasseh, Asher, Naphtali, and Zebulun, they began to pursue after those who are trying to escape. Now Gideon, though, at this point, you remember where Ephraim was at? I showed you on the map. Ephraim was down south. But Gideon, he calls on these people, said, I need you to do a couple of things. Help us. Don't let these people get any water. And don't let them cross back over the Jordan River and get back home. So these people from Ephraim basically owned, so to speak, the fords across the Jordan, particularly I think the one there north of Jericho that we talked about Wednesday night, near the City of Palms. So that's what happened. These people joined in. And if I get this to work, they joined in, not only joined in, but they actually captured and killed a couple of the princes of the Midianites. Well, you think everything's going to be okay. The war has been won. No. These men of Ephraim, they were not just angry. It said they chided sharply. I mean, they were more than angry. They were upset because Gideon had not called them to battle to start with. Well, again, we don't know why that didn't happen. But again, if you look at the map, Jezreel Valley is way up here. So these are the people who were in immediate danger. Ephraim was way down here, which appeared not to be in danger, but Gideon obviously didn't know which way these people were going to run. They lived to the south, probably to the south, but why he didn't call them, we don't know. But he handles the situation extremely well. Look at what he says. The gleaning of Ephraim is greater than the harvest of Abiezer, however you pronounce that. This is the guy who, if you look back in chapter 6 and verse 34, he's the guy that sent out the call to the other tribes. He's the one that put the armed forces together for Gideon. But he says, look, you remember the difference between gleaning and harvesting? Harvest was when you went in when the crop was mature to start with. The gleaning was out there just picking up the scraps, so to speak, you know, after the harvest had already begun. But he says, Gideon comes by and says, God delivered Oreb and Zeb to Ephraim, and what was I able to do in comparison to this? He's basically saying, all I did was blow a trumpet, break a pitcher, hold a torch up, shout out, and look what you did. We didn't do anything with that. But you captured two of the princes of Midian and killed them. So, right then, the men of Ephraim seemed to be happy. Will they stay happy, Freddy? No. The men of Ephraim, as we continue our study, you're going to see that these guys, and I'll use the term top dog, they seem to want to be top dog. So they're going to be upset in the future because of some situation. So jealousy looked like prevailed between the people of Ephraim and some of the other tribes. I'm just kind of reading that in, but knowing some of the things that maybe happened later. So, all is well now between the tribes. But again, we see the power of God and the mercy of God extended to people who had turned their back on him time and time and time again. But every time they asked for his help, then he was willing to send that Savior to them and deliver them out of the hands of the oppressor. Should that be a comfort to us? Not that we ought to go and turn our back on God, but we know that there is a God who will hear us when we truly repent of our bad deeds. Almost time. We had a lot of material. I hate to rush through it like that. Anybody have a comment, question? Questions will be directed back here somewhere. Adam asked me that you go, it was a question we can't answer now. I mean, he asked me that out in the foyer there. I said, that's Freddy's job. That's not my job. Anybody have a comment?
Yeah.
Yeah, Randall points out that no matter what the odds are, here he is, the odds 300 against a multitude is not even numbered. With God's help, they were able to do it. And points out that when Gideon heard the things that were occurring in the Midianite camp, then his faith was built, he was strengthened. In the same way, when we hear God's word, we should have our faith strengthened. And so, faith comes by hearing and hearing by the word of God. Other comments? All right. I think that about does it, maybe. Appreciate your attention, and Wednesday night, we'll proceed on and see who the next judge is. Be working on the judges. Othniel, Ehud, Shamgar, Agdamarah, Gideon. So we down that far. So we're going to get Abimelech. Tola, Jair, Jephthah, on down to the end. All right.